This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at HomeTeam.com.
So the longer you wait, the harder it becomes. You're never too young. You're never too old. Get the information. If you haven't bought a house, go buy a house. If you bought one, go work on your second one. If you bought two, go work on your third one. I think as a family, as a community, we need to model this so that our next generation, this is not something that they wish for. It's something that they know they have to go get, that they have to do. Right? And I want to model that for them.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the Color of Money podcast. My name is Julia Lachey, and I am here joined with my fabulous co-host, Mr. Daniel Dixon, Imric Peace. And today we have a phenomenal guest, my friend, Ms. J. Renee Walker. Ms. J. Renee Walker is the managing broker of Compass Texas. What that means is that she oversees all of almost 4,000 agents in the state of Texas. Before we went live, Daniel mentioned that that could be a podcast all on itself. Some of us can't manage our own team of four, yet somehow she's managing a team of 4,000 here in Austin, Texas, is where we're both located. But she's got a pretty extensive background. She's been past president of the Austin Black Real Estate Professionals, past president of Williamsburg County Association. She's been named Realtor of the Year. She's been named Businesswoman of the Year. She's been on HGTV. She's been on all kinds of things. But today we're here to talk about the fact that she's also an esteemed author. And she's written a book called Her First Place. So if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you know I love when we have other female leaders on the podcast, and specifically when we are talking about women buying real estate, because I'm not going to get all into my numbers and stats that I like to get into, but there is a lot of disparities, and one of the primary people purchasing houses right now happens to be Black women. And so Ms. J. Renee is going to talk to us about what that looks like, what that means in the scope of building wealth. And welcome, Ms. J. Renee, and welcome Daniel and Imric.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Very excited to have you here. I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to just ask you to tell us what we should know about you.
So you pretty much talked a lot about what I do and what I've done. Most importantly, I have written a book, started a foundation during the pandemic. So when things were a little slow, I thought, let me write a book. And I started this by saying, let me write a book by something I know. And buying a house is kind of where I started this project. When I got into it and started looking at the statistics, I realized I was writing a love letter to Black women and encouraging them to buy their first home and what was stopping them from buying their first home. So the book is called Her First Place. It came out a year ago. I'm excited that it has done as well as it has. In writing the book, I realized that it wasn't the fact that she didn't have a good job and she couldn't afford a mortgage. Sometimes she couldn't afford the down payment to get started. And so as a result, I also started a foundation. The foundation gives money to Black women who are buying their very first home. And it goes like this. If you are out there and you have somebody that is buying a first home, a Black female, and you are a realtor, a realtist, and you are willing to give up a referral fee, that referral fee goes back to that buyer to help her with her down payment. And then some of that goes to the next Black woman, to the foundation, to help another Black woman. So none of the proceeds from the book, none of the proceeds from the foundation go to me. All of the money goes directly to the foundation to help Black women.
Wow.
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely.
So when we think about the ownership, the home ownership rates for Black women being so low, where do you think, Renee, that's starting from? Like, how A, where do you think the problem lies? And B, how do we solve this problem to get more Black women into homeownership?
So Black women aren't unique in this, right? So if you look at Black folks in general, and you can go way back. So I always say before we owned property, we were owned property. And think about the Civil War and coming out of that and this whole General Sherman saying, your guy's going to get your 40 acres and a mule. Do you remember that from school? Well, we never really got our 40 acres and a mule. And how that came about is that field order number 15 that we were taught in school said that we would get part of the land that was out of Georgia and South Carolina. We were going to be able to govern our own. And then we would get up to 40 acres. The mules came later. The mules were left over from the army, right? And they were only going to be on loan. We weren't even going to own those mules, right? And then Lincoln died. We got a new president. And the new president said, we're not doing that. And so we never got it. But think about if we had. Think about the difference of Black homeownership had we actually got what we were promised then. If you come up through segregation and all of those redlining, how we got to where we are was planned. Wasn't an accident, on purpose, intentionally? And so coming from that, that says, regardless of what your background was, regardless of what your mama and them did, you can still own a home. Let me tell you how. And oftentimes, it's our credit. Oftentimes, it's the down payment. But when you look at who's buying homes in the last 5 years, that number of Black women have gone up greatly. Partly it's because we start talking about it. We said you could when other people said you can't, right? We stopped listening to mama and them that had bad history, that had bad examples of why they couldn't buy a home, what they didn't have. And they started saying, let me teach you the fundamentals of buying a home. So maybe you can't do it next month, but if we can put a plan together, you can do it next year. And actually, Daniel, it's more about educating women about how they can and what steps they need to do to prepare themselves to buy a home.
Yeah, and I think one of the resources a lot of people don't lean into enough is down payment assistance programs and utilizing the resources and community funds and different things like that to be able, I mean, that's the biggest challenge of homeownership is I don't have $20,000, $25,000 for a down payment. I can afford the monthly, but I just can't, I don't have the initial to actually get in. And there's really good programs out there that can support you in being able to help pay for your closing costs or help fund that down payment to get you into homeownership.
But knowledge is power. If I don't know, I don't know where to go. I don't know who to ask. Nobody told me about that. I look back and things that nobody told me, even in real estate school, that nobody told me and educated me. If I can give knowledge, which what I tried to do in this book, on where you can go, where you can get money, how much I need, where I can go get zero. I don't need any money down payment or maybe just 3.5%. And we, you know, we have in our mind that I need 10% or I need 20% down. No, you don't, right? Find out, get with somebody who actually knows how to do this, who's done this multiple times, because you don't need that much money. And by the way, the money you have saved is probably enough.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you find that somebody? Because what ends up happening is, and it's not as much of a problem as it used to be, but I know a lot of times Black people wouldn't look or seek to use a Black agent. And they would go and find somebody and they say, oh, I want to buy a house and I don't have a lot of money. And for whatever reason, some real estate agents weren't really interested in working that hard to find out how to help you if you didn't come with a credit and you didn't come with 20% down. And so if somebody wants to do that, who do they turn to? Where do they go to find somebody? You said get with somebody who can help you. Who's the somebody and how do I find them?
So there's a lot of somebodies, but let's start with the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, which is a whole group of Black realtors, not realtors, realtors, that are geared to help building wealth in our community, right? But you can actually go search. What I always recommend is interview real estate agents that have your best interests in mind, that have done this before, that understands your needs, your struggles, where you want to buy, right? Who has a heart for first-time home buyers. And I have to say, all of us that look like us don't do that, right? So there are folks out there that will take the time to walk you through. Now, I will tell you, first-time buyers, they're probably not going to spend a couple million dollars. They're probably going to need a little bit more hand-holding than somebody else. But I will tell you that it is the most worthwhile, self-satisfying accomplishment that I've ever had. The whole idea of sitting across from somebody who is able to now to buy a house that never thought they could, that thought that they would have to lease for all of their lives, who only watched their mama and their grandmama and mom and them only lease and be able to educate them to get a house that they own, that they can build equity in, that they can pay off, and then later on they can borrow from to start a business, to send a kid to college. Yeah, that's satisfying.
So, you know, hey, and Jamie, hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm great. Hey, you know, and we had this conversation and you said specifically geared towards Black women. And we keep having this Black conversation. And sometimes, you know, why do we keep having this Black conversation? Why can't it be people?
So the statistics are different for people versus Black women, right? And so I went to where the need was. The need is, and the opportunity is right now for Black women. So here is the deal. Oftentimes, and I'll use myself as an example. When I went to buy my very first house, I was 22 years old. I had signed the contract. I called my dad and said, guess what I did today? I bought a house. My dad almost flipped out. I didn't see the house. How could you have signed the paperwork? Maybe I can get you out. Why are you buying a house now? Why don't you wait till you get married? All of those questions. And, you know, my dad is a dad of a certain age. And those are typical questions that says, why aren't you going to wait for that man to buy you a house? And dad, because I could do it on my own, because I don't have to wait for a man to help me buy a house. I've got a good job. I've got good credit. I got down payment. And waiting, you know, I didn't get married until 5 years ago.
I was going to say, you'll find a good house before you find a good man. I'm just saying.
I was 63. If I had waited, I'll be still waiting, right? So finding a good house, you can do that now. And I'm telling you, it's a lot easier to find a good man. A lot easier than finding a good man. It is.
You asked, Emmerich. You asked.
No. I asked that question because, you know, it's real. And, you know, when we always have these conversations, we get picked apart different ways. So I just wanted to clarify and make that statement. And a lot of times we're not adept enough to the conversation to make sure that people understand that there is a need. You say need, I say requirement, but I'm going to say need just because of this conversation, that there is a need. They don't understand. We don't even understand that there's a need because a lot of times we've been conditioned to believe that leasing, renting is okay. And it's really not. It's really economic freedom. And it's really economic freedom for a Black woman. Just as you said, you know, you didn't get married till 5 years ago. Where would your economic freedom be had you not bought a house? And that's food for thought, because when you buy that house, it stabilizes your living expenses, which ultimately puts you in a better position to secure a financial future. So why wouldn't you have that conversation? And I love this. I love that you're having this conversation. I love that you wrote this book because I come from a single parent household.
Yeah.
Mom.
Well, another thing is, and I don't know if Mark King said this when he was on. We had our president of KW on, Mark King, a couple of episodes ago, but he and I talk about it a lot. He's got this fascination with doing this research about Black women because he feels like Black women are being targeted right now for all the wrong things. Mm-hmm. You know, targeted to get credit card debt, targeted to we have a higher student loan debt than anybody else. You know, there's all these disadvantages and disproportionate statistics that you talk about that specifically are affecting Black women. And so I think what's great about what you're doing is focusing on the education, which of course is what this podcast is about, focusing on the education to help people make sound financial decisions about how to go about doing things the right way, like Imrik said, to set yourself up. So I'm curious, tell us some of the things that are in the book that would help somebody go about doing that.
So I have testimonials from other Black women who have done it. That is like all throughout the book. I have the steps to go about, the questions to ask when you're sitting down talking to your realtor or talking to your lender. It is a how-to book that is really shaped around the experiences of Black women, the other experience of Black women. I wanted to put in here enough stories that said, if they could do it, I can do it. That their story isn't much different than my story. That their age, their income isn't much different than my age, my income. I wanted to show people and model for folks that it can be done. You know, I talk about my story in the beginning of the book. I bought my house when I was 22. I had a lot of difficulties. I didn't close for months after I signed the contract because the people in the neighborhood found out that I was Black and tried to stop me from buying the house. After I moved in, they spray painted the N-word on my house. I lived in Florida. I had a stucco house. It's a cement house. So when you throw eggs and spray paint, it seeps in to the cement. I got canceled by my insurance because they said I was a bad risk in the neighborhood. And so I wasn't allowed to even have insurance on my house. I had gone through that so many times. I woke up one day going out to run and this Black sticky stuff was falling from my house. And I thought, let me just do the run. When I come back, I'll file another police report and have the police come out. I'll be late for work again. The police come out and said, you know what this is? And I said, no, I don't even know what that is. They said, had they ignited it, your whole house would have blown up. That this is a Molotov cocktail. And you were very fortunate that they didn't ignite it. Up until that point, I had no fear. The insurance company wouldn't fix my house. So I'm thinking, well, I'm just going to let it sit there because I don't have to look at the outside of my house. I live on the inside of my house. And my neighbors who had done that, you all have to look at that. After a while, a reporter in Boca Raton, Florida, looked at all the police reports and wrote an article on the Sunday in the life session that says IBM executive feels unwelcome in her neighborhood. Well, that gets a lot of people's attention. When I walked in on Monday morning, I had the CEO, I had HR, I had everybody greeting me and like, how long has this been going on? And like, ever since I bought this house, this has been going on. Unbeknownst to me, the general manager called the sheriff, because at that time, Boca Raton didn't have a mayor, they had a sheriff, and invited them in, put down the newspaper on his desk, and he says, as long as I'm general manager here, I never want to see another article here. He said, I don't have the authority to close down this plant and move it someplace else, but I do have the authority to close every account we have in every bank we have in this city, and we'll move it to the next city. We'll close down every warehouse we have in this city, and we'll move it to the next city. And we'll stop giving to every charity in this city, and we'll give to the charity in the next city. Now, I will have to tell you, that's more than being an ally, right? That's somebody who puts their money where their mouth is. And I didn't find that out until years later that he had done that. But after that, I started seeing the police come through the neighborhood more often. I never had an incident of somebody spray painting my house. I say that is that I went through some challenges to get in the house. But was it worth it? It was worth it. That little $34,000 house in Boca Raton when I was 22 has allowed me to live in a house that's well worth over $1 million that I would never have had that opportunity had I not built equity from a $34,000 house.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more. You know, I'm glad you said that. You said a lot of things that I'd like to address, but ending on the fact that you said that little house helped me get my million-dollar house, because I served first-time home buyers exclusively for 15 years. Most of them were women. Most of them were Black women. I would probably say the majority of my clientele have been single Black women. One thing that I'm just going to say, I'm not stereotyping, I'm just saying in my situation with my clients, a lot of these ladies wanted some really nice houses, and they got to have this, and it's got to look like this, and it better look like that, and ain't no way I'm buying that and this, but they only had X amount of dollars. So in that kind of situation, I love hearing you say it's really not about the house. It was setting you up for something later in the future, right? Does your book talk about that?
It does. So it says small beginnings, right? You got to actually appreciate small beginnings because it's the foundation that you build on. So I worked for IBM for 19 years. I moved to 11 different states in those 19 years. I left IBM to move to California for Toshiba. I left Toshiba in California to come to Texas to work for Dell. Here is the deal. Every single move, I bought another house. Every single move, I was able to step up and step up and step up. It's not the current dream. It's the future dream I was building, right? It wasn't for what I could do just for now, but my eye on the prize that said, and one day I'm going to have the house that I really want. And I am blessed that I have a house that I built, a house that I designed, a house that I was able to pick the things that I wanted in my house, right? A house that today is paid off, right? That's a blessing that started off with $34,000 with 10% down. And let me just add this one thing. I didn't go out to buy a house that day. I was out shopping. I went past the real estate office. In the real estate window, there were all these pictures of houses, and it said how much the monthly payment was.
I like that, yeah.
The house that I bought was less. The monthly payment was less than my rent. That was the attraction. I walked in and said, does that house, that number that you have on that picture, does that include taxes and insurance? And she said, yes, it does. I'd like to buy that house. And she said, would you like to go see it first? And I'm like, yes, but I'm going to buy that house because that house, I can have a house and pay less than I'm paying in rent, right? And how many people are paying $2,500 in rent, $1,900 in rent, $1,500 in rent that we can get you into a house that you own, that you don't have to ask anybody whether or not I can change the color on the walls?
I think it's important to think about, like, if you're going to, even if you make a lateral move and you move from your apartment to a condo, it's still a net win. And so a lot of people have this thought process that the first house is going to be the single family home. And even if we make a lateral move, it's about the dream that you're building in the future. It's not about your dream house today. I think that's a really, really powerful statement.
One of the other things you said, Jay Renee, was when you were telling that story, that egregious story of how you were treated when you bought your house, it did bring to mind safety, you know, of buying a house. We're talking about as a single woman buying a house, which is an experience that a lot of people, you know, have shared, that being alone, will I be safe here? How do you, and specifically as realtors, we know we can't say, well, you should live here because here you'll be safe. We know we don't do that in real estate. How do you help someone who, because there, I have had a lot of clients and I share a lot of stories in my classes about my clients who I didn't want them to live in certain places because I was afraid for them to be living there alone. And I share those stories only because it did turn out in their favor and they were right and I was wrong. But, how do you really help someone identify, you know, what would be ideal for them without steering, you know, without telling people where they should live. But when you're talking about somebody who might be living alone, I'm shocked that you weren't. I'd have been scared. I'd have been out of that house so fast. That first egg, that's all it would have took for me. That first egg would have been it. I'd have been like, you can have it, you know.
I will tell you, I was so defiant that I wasn't going to, right? I'm not moving. I'm not leaving. Now, I also have to tell you that I never told my father that story until I left, right? Because my father would have come and packed my bags for me, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the deal. I tell my clients all the time, as you all do, go visit the property. Go visit it that day. Go visit it at night. Go visit it on the weekend, because the house lives differently, right? You want to make sure that you see the neighbors. I've actually encouraged my clients to go knock on a couple doors of the neighbors. How do you like the neighborhood? What do you like about the neighborhood? How about the schools? What would you want to do differently, right? I think your safety increases the more people in your community that you've connected to. Right? So connect with your neighbors on both sides. Ask them questions. Introduce themselves. I will tell you, I have personally gone and done that and decided I didn't want to live next door to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because I met the neighbors. I'm like, oh, no, I can live someplace else. I don't need to live next door to you. Right? The other thing is there are folks that you need to have on speed dial. Right. So one of the questions I get asked a lot by single women, I don't know how to maintain a house. If something breaks, if I'm leasing, I can call the landlord and they come and fix it. Well, find yourself a handyman that you know and you like and you trust and you use them consistently. Right. So I have had, until I got married, a handyman on speed dial. And now I still have the handyman on speed dial because my husband's not my handyman. He don't do that. He got other things he do really, really well. That's not one of them, right? But being able to have a connection that somebody who knows your house, maintains your house, can change your filters, can go up into the attic, can do all of those things are really important.
Yeah, I think you a lot of things again that you've said, but the getting involved and getting connected to the community is really important. When I bought my first place, I was 19 and bought my first place by myself. And I knew enough. I was also my own realtor. It was also my first transaction. The whole story is bad. But I knew enough to call. I did go to the neighborhood during the day and I knew enough to call. I called the police department, but I was young. I was 19. And my question was, I didn't want to live in a house that anybody had died in. I was afraid of that. So I called the police department and I asked them, had there been any, you know, killings or murders or anything in the house? You know, I was afraid of that. And the lady told me, you know, because I knew enough to call and, you know, inquire. And she said no. And then she asked me, is there anything else you'd like to know? And I didn't get the hint at 19, you know, and I said, no, that's all I am concerned about. And she said, are you sure? And I said, yes, ma'am. And girl, let me tell you, it wasn't until I moved into the house, one of my friend girls worked for the city and she called me and she said, girl, what's your address? And I gave her the address and she ran down. There had been 75 police calls to that house in 1 year. It was the trap house. I bought the doggone trap house, you know, like what in the world? And so I ended up, because people would knock on the door all kinds of weird hours looking for drugs, you know, and I ended up having to connect with my community. What I ended up doing, I know it sounds crazy, but the guys down the street that sold drugs, I ended up having to connect with my community to help protect me in my house. And when I wasn't home, they would watch my house for me and they would, you know, call and be like, are you expecting company? Because somebody, no, you know, and I had to, like you said, you make friends with neighbors and you connect so that when I wasn't there, or even when I was, I knew the guys at the end of the block were looking out for me because I didn't do my all the way due diligence. I did my 19-year-old due diligence, you know. But you said both of those things, yeah.
Yeah, but when you know better, you do better, right?
That's right.
And
that's
the key right to the book is so that you know, right? Yeah. I don't know the questions till I ask because I'm 19 years old. I'm not thinking about that. I want to know if somebody died. I'm not sure. The concern is, could I die?
Right.
Is there potential? I could die in here, right? So asking the questions. And the resources are there, right? The police department, the fire department, all of those. And I encourage everybody, not just Black women, to make those phone calls to find out about the history of your neighborhood, the history of the house, right?
Absolutely.
Those are great points.
What else would we need to know or should we know if we are a Black woman listening to this podcast who would like to get her first place, or anybody who has a Black woman or any woman or in their life who they think should maybe consider looking into this as a means to build wealth?
So a couple of things. Statistics tells me that it's going to be more difficult for you to get a loan than your white counterpart, even if everything else is equal. So you're going to want to start early with this loan process, and you want to find people who are going to lead you in the right direction. You want to ask a lot of questions about the loan, the commitment. When does it start? How much is it going to be? What's the potential of it going up? How much is the taxes? How much is the insurance? Can I afford that comfortably? I don't want you to have to eat out of a can of tuna fish for the rest of your life, right? So what can you afford comfortably? Oftentimes I tell people, just because the bank is going to give you the money doesn't mean you need to take it, right? It's really important that the amount of money you put out every month is comfortable for you. So just because they say you can afford $5,000, if $5,000 doesn't work for you, doesn't sit well for you, don't take that $5,000. If $4,000 works best, then take the four. It is what's comfortable for you, not just what you can, they say you can afford, right? By the way, they don't ask you about your other commitments, right? So you might want to buy some shoes. You might want to start saving for your kids.
Should I get started on the hair? I keep having this, but you might want to buy some hair. You might. We were talking about how expensive the hair was. Like,
absolutely. You may have other things. So you want to take your personal finances into consideration, not just what the bank is willing to lend you. The other thing is ask questions, right? You have to think about, when you go to a bank, I am going to buy money. The better my credit is, the cheaper the money. The worse my credit is, it's more expensive to buy the money. We don't think about it in those terms. We think about, they're going to give me money. They're not giving you anything. You are buying, you are purchasing money. And if your credit is good, it's going to be less expensive for you to buy, because the risk to them for you paying it back is going to be lower, right? And it's a different way of thinking about it than what we've been taught to think about it. That I'm going to go down and ask the man at the bank, and the man at the bank is going to give me money. No, he's not, right? The other thing is, and I didn't know this going in, I thought everybody had a 30-year mortgage. Everybody? Well, everybody don't have a 30-year mortgage. And there's nothing to say that it can't be 27 years, 15 years, 10 years, right? Have them run those reports every different way so you know what's comfortable for you. I am not a big proponent of staying in debt for 30 years, right? So if you can look at and do for 15 years and you can afford that 15-year payment and get out of that debt quicker, let's do that, right?
That's good information.
One of the things that I am really proud, I'm going to show the book now, about the book and the foundation is that I have the freedom to give back. So even if you apply, if you go to apply for the money from the foundation, the least amount you will get is $1,000. The least, right? Depending on the home that you're buying, it could be more. But the least amount you're going to get is $1,000 to help you toward the down payment.
Now, let me ask you, you showed the book, but I know a lot of people are just listening. Can you tell us where we could go to find that book and find information about your foundation?
Yeah, so you can go to herfirstplace.com. You can get the book where you buy your favorite books. You can find it on Amazon, Her First Place. It was number one for a while there. So I'm really proud that I'm a number one bestseller. I'm also proud that Robert Refkin, who is the CEO and founder of Compass, who's also a brother, wrote the foreword to the book. So I'm really proud of that as well. Or from Closing the Houses for Black Women, I can give all of that to the foundation. And that's what freedom allows you to do. That's what legacy allows me to do, right? If you are leaving this earth and you have no proof that you were here, if you didn't leave anything behind for anyone, then did you have a life well lived, right? And so at this stage in life, I want to make sure I leave a legacy for Black women that I can say I was here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I think that this thought of a grassroots type effort to empower our community to learn more, to do more, the hope is that we can make small changes today that come to fruition in 10, 15, 20 years from now. And I think you're doing an incredible job. I already pulled up the book. I'm going to buy the book. I have some people in my life I'm going to get the book for. And I think I love this. So I'm glad I met you. I already sent you the friend request and all the other things, and I'd love to stay in contact.
Thank you very much. Any last words? What's the last thing, the one thing you want our listeners to take from this conversation?
Don't wait, right? So the longer you wait, the harder it becomes. You're never too young. You're never too old. Get the information. If you haven't bought a house, go buy a house. If you bought one, go work on your second one. If you bought two, go work on your third one. I think as a family, as a community, we need to model this so that our next generation, this is not something that they wish for. It's something that they know they have to go get, that they have to do, right? And I want to model that for them.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for everything you're doing in the entire real estate community. Thank you very much. And for all of our listeners, tune in next time for another fabulous episode on the Color of Money podcast. See y'all soon. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.